because we know we're standing between you and the reception. So for this talk, we've got Ed Morris, who's the co-founder of Gossamer Security Solutions. Prior to co-founding Gossamer, Ed co-founded Atlan Labs, that did a large number of FIPS 140 validations. He's a co-founder extraordinaire. After being acquired by SAIC, Ed stayed on as the lab director and eventually wound up as managing both the CC and the FIPS labs before leaving in 2012. Carolyn French is the CMVP program manager at the Communication Security Establishment. Prior to joining CSE, that was in 2006, right? Mm-hmm. Did she join? Yeah. Carolyn worked at Nortel Networks as a senior system architect in the CTO office. Ed and Carolyn will be providing a report from the CMUF, right? Equivalency yep. Working Group. I like to call it Beauty and the Beast. Please welcome Carolyn and Ed.
Thanks, Aaron.
Are they applauding Aaron's joke or?
I don't know. Okay, so the Equivalence Working Group came around after last year's ICMC, where there was a little talk about testing different hardware boxes and being able to minimize the amount of testing happening. So after all the discussions at ICMC, we got together, and it's actually led by Chris Marks from Brocade, who isn't here this week. So Ed and I volunteered to give you a quick update on what we've been working on. So the problem that we're looking at is vendors having multiple versions of a box that they all want to put on the same certificate. And there's a lot of things that are non-security relevant, and some of the obvious things are power supplies, AC/DC, airflow, and those sorts of things. And often these things can be excluded per the FIPS standard, and that happens a lot. They don't have to be tested over and over and over again. So the problem that we are looking at is, what happens when you have similar boxes? The firmware is the same in the boxes, and the boxes are similar, but not the same. They have different ports and interfaces, different processors, and they have things in them that cannot be excluded. Memory and processors being obvious examples. But can we minimize the amount of testing that's being done on all of these boxes? As you know, with the vendors, the certifications are expensive. There's a lot of manpower, NIST fees, capital expense involved. So, how can we make this efficient and in terms of time and money? So right now, in the absence of having some guidance on how to minimize the testing, it's a test everything approach, which is very labor intensive. It's not practical and it's not sustainable. So we're very keen on getting something published that will give consistent guidance on how to do the right amount of testing that will be a short amount of time for the vendors, but will give the CMVP the assurance that we would like to have that the module operates correctly in each of these different versions. So our mission statement is that we will work towards a recommendation in the form of a draft implementation guidance to the CMVP. I represent the CMVP in the working group to reduce the overall amount of testing by considering some technology and component and technologies and components equivalent. We've got a draft IG on the go, and this is. If you guys are familiar with how the IGs work, there's always a problem statement at the top, and this is what we're working with so far. So in the case where a vendor wishes to group multiple hardware modules in the same report and therefore on the same certificate, under what conditions can the lab perform limited operational testing on the group of modules and still provide the assurance that all of the modules meet the FIPS 140-2 standard? What is the minimum set of limited testing, if any, that must be performed on the lab? And the answer could be, full testing on one and no testing on the other thing, on the other boxes, or it might be, so it's anywhere between, test everything and test all on one and none of the others. And that's what we're trying to figure out, is like, what's the right balance? So right now we're only looking at hardware modules because that's where the big changes are. It's assuming that the firmware is the same in all of these hardware modules. They meet the IG 122 guidance about multiple modules on the same certificate in the same report. We do not address physical testing in this because obviously if you change the physical, if you're going for level two for your physical hardware, the lab is going to at least look at each of these boxes and make sure the opacity and tampering is the same for each of them. So they have to actually look at these boxes. Having said that, you may be able to minimize the operational testing between each of these boxes. So you would have a full physical test report for all of the boxes, but you may be able to take advantage of this IG to limit your operational testing on the boxes. So right now we're working on kind of the different things that can be, or the things that can be different within the modules. We have a table of components on the go of what could be different and how that could affect testing, storage and memory, CPU, and we actually have a table that we're going to flash up at the end that goes through these differences and what kind of testing and how would it affect the security of the module and why we would when we would want testing or why we would want testing done on them or do we need testing on them. So that's the table that we're working on right now. So it's not a done deal yet. What are the minimum test suites for each of the components? Is it full test, partial test, no test? Do they only have to look at the bill of sale? And then in that case, what goes on the certificate? Another option that we're also looking at is, can you have almost vendor affirmation of different boxes if they don't want to actually have it on the certificate? Could we have an option that's a little bit like software where only certain boxes go on the certificate, but you might have different boxes in the security that have been vendor affirmed to operate to the FIPS 140-2 standard? So this is the sample process that we have. It's basically the lab and the vendor are going to work out what the equivalent testing is going to be. And what we're hoping for is an IG that is clear enough that there won't be a lot of questions asked or once we get going, it should be pretty clear what testing needs to be done, because we don't want the situation to happen where the lab and the vendor decide on the equivalency testing that they're going to do, and then have the CMVP come back and say, no, you need to test all of these things. So that's what we want to avoid. So hopefully, once it's agreed up front, you don't need to come and check with us. Hopefully the IG will be clear enough that you can figure it out, and then it just goes through the regular validation process. So, like I said, next steps are to work on the components list and what are the minimum testing requirements for each of these. And that's where you come in.
It's already open.
Super. Thanks, Aaron. Excuse me. So I think Carolyn gave a great introduction. I'll also add that I kind of got involved with the working group more than a year ago. I think the CMVP asked me to present at the lab managers meeting about hardware equivalency. And there was a couple of different topics, but I presented on that, and then I got involved in the working group. From the lab point of view, I've done a number of validations over the years, and so I've done some of these validations where we've done kind of hardware equivalency. I think it was about 10 years or so ago, we had a customer, and their network devices had a number of different, actually, kind of almost add-on hardware components. You could get it with a modem, without. You could get it with an AC power supply or a DC power supply. And really, it was one chassis that they put these different components into, but they actually sold them as different SKUs. And so we went to actually say, okay, well, what's the validation contract going to look like? We did the combinatorics. They've got 64 different modules. Well, you know, the pricing on that wasn't too attractive. And when we kind of looked at what we could do, what we ended up doing was getting a subset, and it was sort of the superset of all possible. And then we actually tested just that superset, which I think it was maybe 4 or 6 different modules. And then we wrote up an explanation. We worked kind of on a one-off process with the CMVP. I think Randy at the time, I was having discussions with him. But that type of validation, that type of strategy, I think is what this IG is going to be about. Exactly as Carolyn said, reducing the number of modules that you have of actual hardware versions. And I think vendors have been doing this in different ways. Maybe it was kind of similar to what we did back at Atlin with that one customer. But you can manage this from a kind of a business perspective as well. You're going to get the validation done on a certain series of boxes, and then, you know, ones that fall into that series or close to that series. The goal here is to be able to accommodate those, have them on the actual certificate, but not have a lot of repeat testing. The chart that I'm displaying here, it's probably going to be too small for most people to see, which is probably for the best, because this is sort of working group material. But it's our first cut at the different types of hardware differences and whether or not those would be acceptable to claim equivalence for, and whether or not it's possible to simply test one and cover all, or perhaps, as Carolyn mentions, do some sampled testing on all of them. And I think this will be the real challenge, and this will probably be the work of the meat of the working group, is to work through this and come up with what's acceptable to the CMVP, but lays out the common case so that vendors can take a product of families, a family of products rather, and then figure out which ones do we want to test to cover the rest, and thereby simplify the overall validation effort while still ensuring confidence from the CMVP that what was validated really is there. And as Carolyn mentioned, we've got some things like processor, memory, hard drive, non-volatile storage. What type of equivalence testing would be done? You know, it could be analysis only. As Carolyn mentioned, the bill of materials, looking at that and never actually seeing the other members of the family. It may be sort of full testing on one and then partial testing on others, or it might be you have to do full testing no matter what when it differs significantly. One of the other aspects that we're still kind of toying with is what does one get for their equivalence claim? I think Carolyn alluded to it. With software, you can have vendor-affirmed platforms, and I wondered, could you have the same type of thing for hardware, where it's sort of a vendor-affirmed hardware platform? Maybe that doesn't appear on the certificate. Maybe that only appears in the security policy, similar to what's done with software. But those are the types of issues that we're working through, and I think once the working group has come up with a fairly common set, we'll vet that, and the goal is that the draft IG will then lay out the common case. I expect that labs and vendors will still have corner cases. You know, here I've got a processor, it's ARM on one side, but it's going to be x86 on the other. Do I have to repeat or can I claim equivalence? There might be corner cases like that. The idea, though, is that rather than each vendor or lab anew going to the CMVP asking kind of the same questions that we did 10 years ago, this IG will be able to steer labs and steer vendors into the common cases, and then just leaving the corner cases to kind of be adjudicated, either asking for permission or asking for forgiveness during the validation review process. Carolyn's just informed me there's no forgiveness, so permission only. Yeah. That's pretty much it. So, of course, we welcome folks to join as well to the CMUF, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Should have sent me your. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. God. Oh, there we go. Now I can see it. Under main CPU, ARM v7 versus ARM v8. So let's say somebody gets their cross compiler out and builds something for an ARM v7, which will undoubtedly the binary will run in an ARM v8. Why full testing?
Why full testing on ARMv7 versus ARMv8? So sorry, Kelvin, you said that they're going to compile for ARMv7 and then run it on ARMv8?
Well, let's say this year's model is an ARMv7. Next year you decide, you know, for whatever performance things, you basically pull the chip out, you do a bit of rework on the circuit board just so you can stick an ARMv8 chip in, but you're going to run the same binary on it. Would there be a chance that you do some sort of partial testing as opposed to full testing for that? Because it's going to be the same binary code. An ARMv7 code will run on ARMv8. Should run without any probability or of changes to the crypto boundary. So could partial testing be considered there, considering the same family and you're basically upscaling the processor without changing the binary code?
That's a good question. And just to make sure the level set, you're envisioning this is firmware that runs on the entire box, not just a software library or an executable, correct?
Yeah.
So I'll preface this by saying that this is not in the materials provided by the conference because this is a working draft that's very, very rough. To answer your question, if you came to me and said, okay, I've got three models here, these have ARMv7, they're just ARMv7 processors, this one happens to be ARMv8, but we're running the exact same image on it, it's not really taking advantage of the 64-bit capabilities, I'd be inclined to say that, yeah, maybe that would be a hardware equivalence case. Now, whether that falls into no testing whatsoever, or whether that falls into some spot testing or some light testing in a couple of different areas, that's sort of the negotiation that the working group is going to have and ultimately has to be acceptable to the CMVP as part of that draft IG. Yeah.
Let me take the easy example. A Xeon 5530 versus a Xeon 5462 or what, I made that up, but I've got products that use both and I'm not Intel. Am I going to be able to take those to a lab and say, here they are, without providing sort of chip level knowledge of what Intel would know?
So yes, in terms of hardware equivalence, I think that for you, the vendor, you'd have to show that your compilation, your target architecture that you're compiling for is the same. And thus, I think those are third-party chips. You don't have to provide VHDL or anything, any other justification like that. And you should be able to make a hardware equivalence claim for that.
Okay, good.
And again, I'll caveat that all of this is sort of working group, and the what actually ends up in the IG will be the formal blessing. Daryl.
So a lot of your use cases and discussion has really centered around having model A, B, and C of a device where you can make some hardware equivalencies and perhaps limit testing. But then I think you also spoke to an experience that you had where you had a model A that because of pluggable modules may have a configuration A, B, and C. So are you actually looking to apply this IG to those sorts of scenarios as well? And let me give you a small example. If you have a network switch that has pluggable modules that simply provide variations in interface but no cryptographic functionality, would you envision that being covered with this sort of an IG?
That's a great question. And there's even a couple different forms to that. I think the CMVP refers to speeds and feeds, and the feeds being the different ports. In some cases, the number of ports may be different, and it may be as easy a case, and yes, this would apply to that. In some cases, you may have two different models, a 16-port and an 8-port, and the 8-port is simply a depopulated version. It's half the chips, sorry. And that would be an easy case for hardware equivalence where you test the superset and then either no testing or light testing. And when it comes to kind of pluggable SFP or other types of interface cards, that I think requires a little bit more investigation, but there are scenarios I can think of where you've got the same chipset, the same drivers that are there, and whether you have one card, two card, or three riser cards might be an option. And you know, testing with all three of the superset should cover all of them. So this is intended to cover that, and I think that falls within. Ultimately, there will be, as I said, some kind of corner cases that probably won't, but this should still provide guidance as to what the thinking is for hardware equivalence.
And one other quick question, Carolyn, mm-hmm. since you're a CMVP representative on this body, do you anticipate CMVP really being able to get behind this sort of a guidance? I know that modularity within modules is just continuing to grow. Do you see this perhaps having a good path towards success?
Well, so I don't think we would have this working group if we didn't think there would be, you know, some sort of chance of success. We want this to succeed. We want to be able to define something that makes the testing process efficient and maximizes the coverage, but not sacrificing assurance.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, sure. sorry, Kelvin. One thing, Carolyn just reminded me. There's a set of caveats that come that's in the working IG draft. Things like entropy and other things that can cut across hardware throws a monkey wrench into your gears. But assuming that you've accounted for entropy, this then you can claim these types of hardware equivalents. So this is still working draft. Go ahead, Kelvin.
So as much as I like this, I'm going to sort of throw the ugly scenario in here. So under main CPU, same family, different clock speed, number of cores. So let's take the scenario. We've got processors got two cores. One core dedicated to doing general purpose processing, one core dedicated to doing crypto. You've decided to take something from the same family. All of a sudden, you've got 16 cores. You still have that one core for your general purpose processing. But now the 16 cores, great. Now we can do parallelisms. We can effectively process the crypto much, much more efficiently. So same binaries, but completely different execution paths. Right now you've got that under, hey, no problem, equivalency type AO. But the software designers, and luckily none of the ones from Cisco are here because they threw me under the bus for saying this, they could take a completely different execution path to get to that end. How are you going to catch that?
So I think you can construct scenarios like that that, if not discussed between the lab and the vendor, could go unnoticed. My own take is that the vendors are going to be encountering those themselves, and that it's a small trade-off, it's a small risk, that corner case, compared to the larger expended effort of potentially unnecessary retesting, that it's an acceptable trade-off, improving the program and the throughput with accepting some residual risk. That's kind of my take. And I can say that because I'm not the one accepting that risk. That's the CMVP's responsibility in a way. So ultimately, what we do come up with will need to be endorsed by the CMVP, but the lab and the vendor will be on the hook to sort of defend. Carolyn showed an earlier slide that had the process where the lab and the vendor will discuss, come up with, you know, what you think you need to test. Ultimately, that validation needs to be kind of held accountable during the review process. Yeah, that's good. Or as part of the initial discussions, some of this could even be front-loaded to the proposal phase, because how many models do you wish to test, right? But yeah. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
There you go.